I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I interview on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Jim Cantarucci. All four of Jim's grandparents were born to peasants in Italy, working in the fields. The sacrifice, risk, and courage for future generations that he describes in his bio say something about who Jim is. Jim started working before age 16, cutting grass, waxing cars, and delivering pizza and subs. Jim went to Ohio State, got a degree in finance, and then began his career as a staff accountant for five business entities, providing advice to the business leaders. In 1995, he started Transition Management Advisors. And Jim is the author of Personal Brilliance, A Unique Approach to Developing an Individual Habit of Innovation. He's also the author of Change Project Management, The Next Step. Jim, welcome to the show.
David, I'm thrilled to be here. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Me too. You sent me a copy of your book, and I'm so thrilled that I had the opportunity to read it. You have some really phenomenal ideas in there. And the title of the book is Personal Brilliance, which is your main theme in what you do. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about what it is and why you became interested in personal brilliance.
Sure. In our work with people in a corporate environment, David, we found that some people were very successful and some just were not. And the search really began for what made the difference. And we also looked at what I did to provide value and compared it to what the organization had internally, and we'd looked for the differences. And that's where the foundation of personal brilliance was born. Now, what's the definition of personal brilliance? Here it is. When you're faced with a situation where you have to come up with and implement great ideas, and you can, that's personal brilliance. There's a couple words in that definition that are pretty important. First of all, implement is one. We need to implement a great idea. Ideas come from creativity, but they're not real valuable at all without implementation. And the other component of this definition that's really important is the implication that innovation is an on-demand thing. What we're after is a habit of innovation. It's really difficult to perform at your best on demand without a habit of high performance. Innovation isn't just a switch that you flip. That would be like putting me into an NFL football game on Sunday and expecting me to perform well. It just doesn't work that way. So we're looking for that habit of innovation, that sense of a personal sense of brilliance that we apply in everyday activities that can make a difference in our lives.
Talk to me a little bit about this issue of habits, about creating habits, because you're so right. I find that particularly people who are in leadership roles have lots and lots of ideas. Some of those ideas get implemented, most of them don't, and the implementation itself is never easy.
Sure. I mean, that's what I do all day, David, is work on the implementation of innovation, the actual large organizational change component that's so necessary. But, so often we talk about innovation and we think about great ideas, we think of, Thomas Edison with the light bulb. It's got to be some kind of eureka idea that changes the world. And that's fair. I mean, that does happen, and our world is a better place. I mean, just in our lifetimes, look at what's occurred and what's possible technology-wise, et cetera. But where that comes from, I believe, is that day-to-day habit of thinking innovatively, being able to solve problems well. And they're little problems. It could be, what the process is to do a particular job at your desk. Nobody needs to know about it. We don't need to celebrate it in the press, but it's innovation nonetheless. That's what we're looking for. How do we pull that level of innovation into our day-to-day interaction with our family, small tasks at work, et cetera, so that when the opportunity exists or the need exists for that grand idea to be implemented, we have the capability. We know what to do. And that's what personal brands is about, taking the tarnish off and getting us back to our natural state where we can be creative and innovative on a recurring basis as a natural component of our day. That's what we're looking for.
Jim, in your book, you talk about the catalysts of personal brilliance. Can you describe what they are and tell us a little bit about them?
Sure. There are four catalysts that, as I said earlier, we're born with. It's natural. Awareness, curiosity, focus, and initiative. You know, we're naturally aware. We're always curious. We're looking for things. I mean, just picture a baby and the why questions that occur in a toddler. Focus. An initiative. You know, we're born with these things. We take action naturally as a small child. And again, those natural catalysts, those four catalysts, become tarnished. And if we can create a situation where we can become more self-aware, we can be aware of our environment, we can be curious and ask questions and possess a sense of both wonder and doubt. And then from a focus standpoint, being able to have a 360-degree focus that considers everything about the problem. And then, of course, we become an action hero and take action with initiative. That's the formula that gives us personal brilliance. And that personal brilliance then is evident. It's attractive to other people. It allows us to get involved in opportunities that take us further. And then we apply that habit of innovation and create grander and grander solutions. That's what it's all about.
Jim, what's the personal brilliance quotient, and how can our listeners take advantage of what it is or learn about what it is for themselves?
Sure. If you visit our website, and we'll give you that information through the show, I'm sure, we have an online assessment. It takes about 10 minutes or so, and it's quick answers to questions. And what it's designed to do, the personal brilliance quotient, is designed to identify where you are currently with these four catalysts. Ultimately, our goal is that each of the four catalysts are relatively equal and balanced across the board, and then we work on the next step of growing all four catalysts so that we continue to make improvements and get better. So the personal brilliance quotient is designed to look at your status at the moment and then give you some guidance for how to tackle the material that's in the personal brilliance book and allow you to do that work in a very targeted way so that you can get the most out of it. And that's the idea between the personal brilliance quotient. So for all of our listeners, please go online and take a look at it, and trust me, you're already brilliant. Don't be afraid of the test. It's not that bad, but it gives you some guidance on how to tackle the material, and that's what it's all about.
Great, thanks. And we'll put the website in our show notes.
Sure, sounds good.
Jim, what are some examples that you have seen of the results that companies have achieved when the leaders understand their personal brilliance and how to enhance it?
Well, it brings up an interesting question, David. Where does innovation come from in a corporate setting, in an organizational setting? I think a lot of our work, you would probably agree, is top down. When we work on leadership, when we lead organizational change, the things that we're advising our clients on, you and I are advising our clients on, tend to be top down driven. And we're developing leaders and their skills so that the organization can be better. Innovation's a little bit different. In fact, I take the exact opposite approach from an innovation standpoint. I believe that innovation is a bottom-up approach. What we're looking for is that we bring in people into our organization that possess and are developing an individual habit of innovation, personal brilliance, and that by gathering those individuals together, our organization can then be more innovative. The mistakes we see at an organization level when we're looking for innovation are things like, you know, idea generation systems and little rewards and contests for creativity. And it's disjointed and it's not necessarily purposeful. And we tend to be looking outside, like somebody else is going to come up with a great idea and then tell us worker bees what we're supposed to do with it. That's the corporate model that we tend to see that doesn't work very well. If we, from a leadership standpoint, organizationally relative to innovation, we want to make sure that we set up the infrastructure, but then we stay out of the way and allow individuals with their habit of innovation to bring our organization forward. Now, that takes some courage from a leadership standpoint, and hence a lot of our work that we do with our clients. It takes courage. It's a little scary. You don't actually know what the results are going to be when you set out, but it's the roller coaster that has generated large innovations in our society over time. And that's what we need from an organizational standpoint to become more innovative. A lot of times we're simply in the way of great people that we have working with us and not allowing them to be as innovative as they can be. And that's the challenge that we have in a corporate setting, organizational setting, to be more innovative.
Well, that's actually a really interesting observation. I'm wondering, what are some of the warning signs that leaders should be aware of so that they do stay out of the way of innovation? I like the way you describe it.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we've probably talked a lot about it before. A lot recently is written about the ability to fail and allowing failure to happen. If we don't, you know, if we're always looking for who's going to get in trouble or who to blame for a particular mistake or problem, that's an indicator that we might not have an environment that's going to allow innovation to flourish. Allowing the devil's advocate to rear their head too early. You know, somebody comes up with an idea, discusses the idea, and we jump on it right away and talk about why it won't work. That's not how it's done around here syndrome. You know, if we tend to see that, observe that type of behavior, and it doesn't have to just come from the boss, by the way, it could come from colleagues as well. If we observe that type of behavior, again, another sign that we might not have the environment that allows innovation to flourish. If people are complaining about the problem, but not naturally bringing solutions to that problem, looking to the boss to come up with a solution, kind of the, you know, labor union complaint process, you know, mm-hmm. if that's what we're seeing in our organization, again, it's a sign that says innovation isn't allowed to happen around here. And then, you know, at the same time, we've got a boss saying we need to be more innovative, come up with great ideas, you know, by Tuesday. We want to, you know, that type of behavior tells us that we might be on the wrong track. What we're looking for instead are people out there trying things, people in the front lines listening well and bringing that to the table and ensuring that when we do strategy and we start to work on grand plans for the organization, that we're considering that customer's voice, we're looking at the marketplace closely, and then we're putting things into place to meet those needs. That's where innovation starts to naturally come out. So that's what we're looking for, and every organization is a bit different, but we see a lot of similarities as far as the symptoms are concerned, and it explains away why, you know, things aren't happening as quickly as we would like, or we're not meeting those needs of the marketplace and doing those grand things that we see out of, you know, some of the benchmark companies today, like Apple or some others that are being really innovative. Why aren't we that way? And many times those are the symptoms that we're looking for.
So Jim, if you're a leader and you want to encourage innovation, you are allowing your employees to take risks, you're trying to create an environment where failure is okay, and you'll learn from mistakes that happen or learn from failures so that you continually improve. How do you draw the line between failure that can be helpful to innovation in the long term and poor performance, where there are activities that are going on that employees are taking that are really detrimental to business in the long term? How do you find the balance between the two?
Well, what your question reminds me of is the stereotypical ping pong table or foosball table in a startup's office. And you look at that and say, are we having fun here or are we goofing off? And you start to try to answer that question. Here's the answer, to, as far as I'm concerned, and the guiding principle that allows this concept to work. It's all about value creation. Everybody in the organization, from the top product engineer to the receptionist, can create value. And if we're focused on value creation in our particular sphere or job function within the organization, then our choices that we make, when we make a mistake, we're making a mistake because we're trying to create more value. And maybe we went too far or we didn't go far enough. We can analyze that mistake and learn from it. If we make a mistake out of laziness or, you know, avoiding extra effort or what have you, you can tell the difference. If you're going for value creation and you miss, that mistake is a useful mistake and a valuable failure. And I think that's the key linchpin, is that sense of value creation. And if that's everybody's goal, we tend to win more than we lose as far as making the right choices is concerned.
That's a great definition. Jim, tell me how your work falls under the umbrella of the new leadership normal.
That's a bit of our branding around the leadership work that we do, the new leadership normal. Great leadership isn't new, David, right? We've had great leaders throughout history. Great leadership being the norm in organizations, though, is what is new. It's been such an exception. You know, what we're doing with what we teach is about creating a formula and a pathway to great leadership. And I frequently get to hang out with employees because of the change work that we do, and I get to hear the dirt. You know, it's pretty typical to hear the Dilbert-like stories about the person's leadership team. That's pretty normal human behavior. You know, picking on the president of the United States has become a sport. You know, so we tend to be trained to do this. But I also hear complaints about that local manager, that direct connection to the organization, of the organization and the frontline person. And in some cases, I see a deep disrespect and distrust for these leaders. You know, based on what I hear every day, great leadership isn't normal. But that's what our ideal is. That's what we're shooting for. And we're trying to develop leaders so that they can, so that great leaders are more of the norm and not the exception to the rule. That's what the new leadership normal is all about.
Great. Well, this question may sound a little simplistic, but is there a formula that can be used to help teach leaders and their organizations to have the kind of leadership you're describing?
One of the base formulas that we use to, you know, I guess as a descriptor or a way to describe what we're after and to be the label, if you will, that we hang our hat on relative to the concepts that we're teaching is called the 90-10 to 60-40 equation. And what this equation indicates is a movement and transition. We're moving from 90-10 to 60-40. If you don't mind, I'll quickly define these numbers. 90-10 in the equation represents the typical ratio that most leaders apply to their work. 90 indicates that 90% of the leader's time, their thoughts, their actions, really their entire being is spent on running their department. 90-10, 90% of the leader's being is spent running their department, and 10% of their being is spent on activities that lead the company overall. So we get pretty parochial about what we're doing. You know, 90-10 is typical for most. There are some jobs, of course, that are designed to cut across the whole organization, so there are some exceptions, but 90-10 is pretty typical. A lot of leaders claim that I'm being generous, and their ratio is really more like 99-1. But again, we find 90-10 is pretty typical. What we're doing with the new leadership normal is shifting this ratio from 90-10 to 60-40. That is 60% of the leader's effort is spent running their department, but now a full 40% of the leader's being is spent on leading the company overall. And I think you can recognize that if you change your approach to 40% of your efforts being focused outside your department and for the company overall, we're talking about massive change here. And that's where we do our work. How do you make that shift from 90-10 to 60-40? And that shift is what pulls the triggers for engagement, getting people involved, proper delegation, people right working on the right things, people making decisions for the right reasons, not just for their local area, etc. All of those things that contribute to very successful organizations and championship teams.
Do you find that there's tension between supporting success for the individual and success for the team?
Sure. Well, it's that's natural in human, and we need to overcome that by determining what's best in the long run. So, you've been in organizations where there's a lot of infighting and political wrangling going on. And I remember an old quote, and I saw him live, Tom Peters, in front of an audience, said that his definition of balance is two vice presidents with offices right next to each other, and they wanted to kill each other every day. And that was balance. And so, we have organizations like that, and we know that that doesn't work. So cooperative effort, moving towards the same goal, is what's important. And what you find in a championship team is that everybody benefits. And of course, if you haven't experienced that, you don't get it. And it's more narcissistic and more selfish. So we're trying to smooth that out, shift that mindset, and show you the benefit of working in that way. And it is a challenge sometimes. And by the way, we don't have enough lifetime to reach everyone. Not everyone's capable.
Jim, let's shift gears for a minute and talk about your own entrepreneurship. I know that you're involved in a new tech startup. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure, I'd love to. What we're doing, I'll be a little vulnerable with you, David. When we wrote Change Project Management, The Next Step, I knew that the methodologies and the techniques that we laid out in that book, we know they work, number one, but we also knew how complex they were and that they were difficult because there were a lot of moving parts, a lot of data involved, a lot of information about stakeholders, et cetera, in the change process. And when we do it in real life ourselves, we had relational databases that made it work. And at the time I wrote Change Project Management, The Next Step, the technology just wasn't there to make systems that, you know, were capable of working in multiple industries and so on. It was very specialized. And so what we're doing with Constituent Hub, our new tech startup, and part of my personal brilliance journey too, by the way, is to experience that whole tech startup piece as well, so personally motivating. But we decided to automate that process and make it easier for those that lead change to be able to do that in a very efficient and effective way so that we can use the data. So much is wasted and lost in the change leadership process. And in fact, we sometimes throw up our hands and don't do it at all because it's so difficult. And we're looking to solve that problem. And so what we decided to do is actually create a startup situation. We're working with an organization called Tech Columbus here in Columbus and working through that whole process like any other tech startup, not just treating this as a separate product of our company. And so it's an interesting journey that's just starting and we're having fun with it so far.
Fascinating. So Jim, you mentioned in your bio that your grandparents were very influential on your development, and you have certainly had a long and storied work career starting at a very early age. What have been some of your biggest challenges personally?
Well, you know, when you look at challenges, you know, it's always a very difficult, question to answer and touch on. I think the entrepreneurial spirit doesn't do enough to celebrate the hurdles. When you look at a championship golfer like Jack Nicklaus, he literally does not remember missing shots. he's blocked them from his mind. So I think we're good at doing that. But if I had to look at the biggest challenge that I consistently faced, it's that balance between work with clients versus the investment in dollars and time that it takes to develop new products and new solutions. So, for example, the book Personal Brands was easy to write for me, but was a huge effort to market and all that goes with that when you're putting out a best-selling book. You're investing a lot of uncompensated time to take on a project like that. It's a juggling act when you purposefully want to have a small footprint like I do. And so how do you do that? Do I leave my clients alone and go off to the ivory tower, come up with something, and then come back out with it? That's why as an author, I purposefully don't create a new book every year. So that's really the biggest challenge that I face on a consistent basis. And I'm constantly searching for the right mix as far as allocating the important resource of our brain power and our labor to how we actually go about solving that problem.
Jim, what is one of your influencers that's been most pivotal in your career?
Well, I think that, when I look back at influencers and what we were trying to accomplish, I really look back at a couple of people. And I really, I read a lot. I watch a lot. I think, a very important addition to my mix is being a member of the National Speakers Association as a professional speaker, because there are so many resources just built into that process. But, when I look back, it's really the individual relationships rather than what I read in a book. When I look at my first job, I hung out with, and I was fortunate enough for an old guy to take me under his wing. I was 17 years old, going to school full time, working full time, first put a tie on to do my work. And luckily, the vice president of finance took me under his wing. He was an old guy. He was 32 years old, believe it or not. And
sounds really old.
He was old to me at the time, right? And he would do things like call me into his office and say, I just got into a battle with the vice president of sales. Here's what the problem was. What do you think about that, Jim? And I didn't maybe realize it at the time how invaluable that was, but geez, that was big. And then when I went to my next job, which was a small consulting firm, I was the second employee in that firm, and we grew it to be acquired. It's now part of Fidelity Investments. The founder of that firm, every day put us into a championship team environment, and we learned things every day. And so that was very important to make an imprint on me on how things should work and what's possible. And then in my professional speaking and the organization we have now, there's a gentleman named Nito Cobain who he currently is president of High Point University, but his business model, his way of working is very similar to mine, and he's been a great mentor throughout. So, that combination of individual human beings, without discounting at all, being extremely well-read, constantly having five or six business books on going at one time, watching video, listening to podcasts, going to live events, all of that is valuable. But I think the kicker is having those individual mentorship relationships, seeking them out and creating value back and forth and making those work. That to me is the biggest influence in my life, being able to look behind the scenes and tap into that expertise and experience from people who've been there. So.
That's a theme that I'm hearing from nearly all of our guests on this show. So,
it's interesting because you can always point to one or two books that make a difference, but to me, I think that never ends. It's a constant influx of good information and then interpreting and how you would use that. So I'm really bad at remembering authors' names and titles of books, but I can remember the concept, right? And when you're able to make it real by an individual person who's living through it, it makes those books come alive. And to me, that's the best combination.
It certainly is. So speaking of which, who do you know personally who's currently doing work that you're especially excited about and why?
There's a friend of mine named Jeffrey Hazlett, and many of your listeners will probably have heard of him. That's who comes to mind for me as you ask that question. He had a career in marketing, and that led to the role of being CMO of Kodak, a pretty big job. And with that, appearances on The Apprentice, and he's since gone on to create some best-selling books, and he's now a regular on Bloomberg TV, C-Suite TV, where he's interviewing and trying to extract value out of executives, a C-suite book club on CNBC and so on. So he's doing some interesting things and creating models where the habit of innovation and personal brilliance is clearly at play, and actually working with those four catalysts of personal brilliance: awareness, curiosity, focus, and initiative, and being able to watch that pretty closely from the wings and see Jeffrey's progression and journey valuable as well. So I think he's somebody to watch for sure.
That's a great example. Jim, in addition to your startup, is there something you're currently working on now that you're excited about that you'd like to share?
Well, I think that the work that we consistently do with leaders and helping them create that environment, that championship environment, that new leadership normal, and applying that 60-40 equation and being able to get there. It's transactional, maybe not something we write up in a business journal, perhaps a Harvard Business School case study someday, but that's what we're working on a day-to-day basis that keeps us fired up and excited about what we're doing. And then things like the tech startup are just ways to enhance that and make that work. So it's the same old, fast-paced, high-intensity innovation formula that we're working on right now. So
delivering value and great results.
You got it. That's a daily occurrence. That's what we want to be about every single day. And it's not more sexy than that, but that's okay.
That's quite fine because people need it.
Right.
Jim, please tell listeners how they can learn more about you.
The best place is our hub. We have multiple websites, but the best place to go is jimcantarucci.com, C-A-N-T-E-R-U-C-C-I, jimcantarucci.com. And David, where we do our best work, and it's accessible through that website, every Saturday morning I share a short email with leaders where we talk about some of the behind-the-scenes things, the work that comes from my work with CEOs directly, privately, that I share there and get you thinking about things from a week-to-week standpoint that can make a big difference on creating championship leadership. And so I would suggest that all of our readers tap into that. It's an easy email subscription. But we try to do that on Saturday mornings when you can take care of yourself as opposed to taking care of everybody else that we do as a leader all week long. So hopefully everybody will join us there and continue this discussion.
Terrific, terrific. My guest today has been Executive Leadership Advisor Jim Cantarucci. Jim is with the company Transition Management Advisors. Thank you again, Jim, for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure, David. I appreciate what you're doing and glad to be a part of it.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by 10 Strategic Partners. Be sure to visit our website at smashingtheplateau.com and join our email list to hear many more great interviews like this one. And if you like what you heard, please leave us a review on iTunes by going to smashingtheplateau.com/iTunes. I'm your host, David Schreiner-Kahn, and we'll be talking again soon.